Welcome. It's March 9th, 2023, 1426 hours. My name is Ward Green. Welcome again to our study for this day, little children. Now today, we're going to be resuming our study of Psalms, because March 9th corresponds to the last digit of the number 149 also. And that is where we have, 148 being the last time we studied Psalms, was 148, the number Psalm 148. And so now we're at 149, which is going to be today's Psalm. But we're also going to study Genesis 9 and paragraph 36 of The Wild Road Ahead to History, part 1 article. The article has two parts, I believe. Is that right? Yes, I believe so. Some of the articles that we have, which were written by Ward Green, myself, yours truly, were given more than one part, and some more than two parts. But this is part one, and there are two parts to this article. It's also called Israel Choosing Egypt as a subtitle, and Meet Your Marker is another subtitle reference for this article. We've studied the chapter one re-evaluation of the Amarnan dynasty, that re-evaluation commencing with the consideration of the 8 years of overlap between the reigns of Amenhotep III and his son Akhenaten, or Amenhotep IV, as he is also known, and also this overlap having been announced by the Egyptian Ministry for Antiquities in February of 2014. Something which caused me to correct my date for Akhenaten. Our date for Akhenaten from 1372, which it had been, positioned as for year one Akhenaten, and moving it then back in this article to 1375, year one for Akhenaten. So, we've studied all of this article in the past number of weeks up until the point we're at now, paragraph 36. But before we start, I think I'd like to talk about, quite a few things I want to talk about. One of them, of course, is cancer. Now, the reason I don't want to normally talk about cancer is because talking about cancer is the same thing as, like with most things, there's a scripture that says, whatever you're fearing, if you're not doing things correctly, you know, if you're fearing something, you are going to have those fears come upon you. You're going to encounter what you fear. In other words, if you fear cancer, you're going to have cancer. You're going to get cancer. So that's why I don't like to consider it. For the most part, it's not a good thing to think about. However, okay, we can think about it in this sense. What is the likelihood of someone contracting a disease like cancer in general, okay? What is the likelihood in a person who just eats whatever they like, and or what they're told to eat, and someone who studies nutrition and tries to obtain the best possible nutrients of all the most important anti-cancer nutrients, as well as most important essentials for health. The health is the thing we need to pursue, not cancer, obviously. We're not just simply being anti-cancer. But being healthy is what we need to pursue if we believe that that prevents the manifestation of cancer. So it really matters what's the probability of getting sick with cancer in the one case compared to the other. You know, in the case of someone who does pursue health and someone who doesn't pursue health, for example, but who just pursues, you know, what the mainstream is telling them. So one thought that I have had, which makes or may not make sense to some people, I don't know, but it's the idea that we all have cancer at all times. We all have cancer. The difference is that in some of us, our bodies know how to fight that, and these cancers that we have are very small for the most part, in various small pockets in our body, in places where the conditions are favorable for cancer. And how likely is that, and how likely is it that when we're very healthy, our bodies can fight those cancers off, and that's why we never see them. If we're healthy, as long as we stay healthy. Now, of course, there's always a probability that certain ones of us have certain genetic predispositions that increase the likelihood of contracting cancer in a serious form. And there are many forms of cancer, not just tumorous cancers, but many other forms of leukemia and many other forms of cancer that don't all fit into the same mold or box. So we don't really want to be or have to be oncologists or experts on cancer, is my point here, if it's in fact true that pursuing good health is the most important thing in eradicating cancer, and if food and the nutrients that we consume have a radical massive impact on the probability of whether these cancerous elements in our body that are everywhere in our body, beginning at all times, cancers being present everywhere in small quantities at all times, or at least in many little pockets at all times. And yet, when we're healthy, these cancers don't ever get a foothold, is the idea. Or the probability is much less, let's say that. Whereas if the conditions are favorable for cancer, then that's, in a sense, asking for cancer. And so we don't need to think about cancer. We need to think about the opposite. How do we get health? How do we get health? Not how do we get the avoidance of cancer. We need to think about how do we get health. How do we create the conditions that make our bodies thrive? Now, even as I say that, I've learned recently that even though I believe my health is at this very moment excellent, and that I am experiencing a renaissance of my health at my age of 66 right now, I'm also aware that certain things are also to us are toxic. Even water is toxic, and people die from drinking too much water, even though that quantity of water is a very large amount that most people would never consider drinking in one day. Water does kill people when they drink too much. And vitamin D is toxic, as I learned, but I took a large quantity of it, and I think you don't even have to take a large quantity. I took tens of thousands of units, international units of vitamin D every day for a long period of time, quite a long period of time, more than, as far as just the tens of thousands, more than, I did that for more than 68 days, but I took 68,000 units for 68 days, and more than that, during those 68 days toward the end of that period. And so I know that vitamin D can have its impact in a negative way. Now, I never get headaches. How many of us know that headaches are caused by calcium deficiency? That's the most common cause for headaches. I had had a slight headache last night. I've had headaches recently that I've never had ever since I started taking calcium. But because I've been restricting my calcium, which is because my vitamin D was in my body, was elevated, was at a level that was too high. Therefore, I'm experiencing some bad effects when I do eat calcium. So in restricting calcium, well, mainly nausea, but I'm not experiencing that anymore either. I mean, not now, not today, and not yesterday. So I can eat calcium again, I just can't eat vitamin D yet. Now, vitamin D will leave your body with a half-life of about 15 days. So, you know, every time another 15 days goes by, I have half as less vitamin D in my body, so I need to wait at least a month, but far longer probably, you know, a couple of months, 3 months maybe, to get the vitamin D out of my system. Well, I think 7 weeks is the estimated amount of time. But, so that's only 49 days actually, so that's not very long. Is that right? No, 84 days, sorry. 12 weeks is probably the estimated amount of time. That's right. But I mean, 7 weeks does a lot. But when I do resume, I will not be taking D at the level I was before. That's the key, okay? I'll be aware of it. I'll be monitoring it. I'll know what the symptoms are of vitamin D toxicity. And there are other things. I think I realized today I've been iodine deficient because I wish to err on the side of caution. So I was taking no iodine during this time. And I was taking no vitamin A for the most part, although occasionally I took one drop of vitamin A, which was 10,000 units, international units. But, I mean, I avoided all my vitamins that were suspect, right, or that could have possibly been causing my symptoms during the time of my recovery so far. And so I've experienced, I believe, a complete recovery already. I'm completely recovered, but I have to pay attention to my continuing to eliminate vitamin D for a while. Now, what if someone does get cancer? We don't want to even consider that, okay? That's not a good question. The good question is, how do we get our health? That's the good question. That's what we need to pursue. So one way is you need to get your omegas. You need to get omega fatty acids, for example, like omega-3s, omega-6s, omega-9s. I'm not taking any of those right now because of this problem. We also need to get boron. I've continued to take that because I am taking some calcium, and you need boron when you take calcium. I do take a small amount of calcium, of course. It's so essential for the body, I have to keep taking it. And as we all do. But the other thing is I've continued my magnesium in proportion to the calcium, which I always do also. In fact, I've been slightly more constipated, so I've taken more magnesium than normal for a while, which is perfectly harmless. It appears that at least, I mean the magnesium is. Now, the other thing, I've been taking less vitamin E because I don't think I need to complicate things during this phase of recovery, but I've been taking a little bit of vitamin E, not every day. I was taking 400 units or 400 something, whatever the unit was, of D-alpha tocopherol vitamin E, the amount recommended by, or half the amount, very close to within the ballpark. Let's say a factor of 2 is not that critical. So roughly the amount that Andrew Saul recommended on his website, DrYourself.com, that amount that he was saying, either 400 or 800 units, whatever it was. I mean, Well, as soon as I mention that, I'll be checking again on what the unit is. I don't need to know all these things at every moment. But there are enough nutrients in our diet that we, our diets, that we need to constantly monitor and be aware that any one of these nutrients could cause any number of problems at any given time. I'm taking vitamin B12. I haven't stopped that because I know it's critical, especially for vegetarians. And I take 500 micrograms, is it? No. 2,500 micrograms. 5,000 micrograms per sublingual tablet, which I cut in half to get 2,500 micrograms. I'm taking vitamin C every day. I'm not going to stop that, but I'm not taking more than about one or two I'm trying to remember, is it international units with vitamin C? I think it is. I think it's international units. No, grams, that's right. No, that's right, yes, it's milligrams, 1,000 milligrams. So 1 gram or 2 grams is what I'm taking with vitamin C. What is the vitamin E unit? Let's look it up. Let me look it up, see if I can do that. Vitamin E unit. Yeah, international units. That's what it is. So now the number of international units has an equivalent in either milligram or microgram, depending on the different vitamin, you know. So for example, for vitamin D, 12.5 micrograms. Or is it milligrams? I think. I'll just look it up. I think it's micrograms. But for vitamin A, you multiply by 3.33 the number of units to get obviously I don't need to keep all this in my head. I've got the internet. 12.5, is it milligrams or micrograms? Micrograms. Vitamin D, I'm going to say that's equal to 500 international units. Yep, 12.5 micrograms of vitamin D is 500 international units. Well, let's say what about 800 micrograms of vitamin A? That's what it is. That's what I'm thinking, yeah. I think. Eight hundred micrograms of vitamin A in international units. Really? There are different units. Yeah, it's more complex. But there is a conversion of 3.33. So you multiply 800 by 3.33 and you get... wow, wait a minute. Okay. That's not a good table. Let's get a converter. I want to make sure I get a conversion calculator for vitamin A. Yeah. The international units can be multiplied by 0.3 for vitamin A. 800. Micrograms, let's say. I think it's 800 micrograms, actually. So let's say 2,500 units. What is that? Right. 750 micrograms RAE, for example. That's about the amount. Well, that's a quarter of the amount that you should be able to take per day for an adult, is 2,500 roughly units of vitamin A. But every person must monitor how their body feels. Listen to your body. That's the other thing. But I mean, all these things. Okay, so I know that the number on the bottle that I have, whatever unit it is. Okay, so let's say 800. Let's say 2700. It's 810. Yeah, so the number on the bottle that I have is almost certainly in micrograms, because I multiply it by 3.33, 2600, 2680, 2690 international units is 800 micrograms, 807 to be precise. 2680 is 804, 2670 international units is 801, 2668, 800.4 micrograms, 2667, 800.1, 2666, 799.8 micrograms RAE, vitamin A. So the amount that I'm taking of vitamin A when I take one of these capsules, it's telling me 800, is about 2666 international units every time I take one of those 800 microgram gel caps, right, of vitamin A. So, no, it's not vitamin A. It's not specifically vitamin A. I mean, it's an omega. The supplement is an omega supplement, omega fatty acid, but it has vitamin A in it in this quantity. That's what I'm talking about. So you have to be careful when you're taking cod liver oil, plus you're taking omegas, plus you're taking krill oil. They all have vitamin A, so you have to be careful with vitamin A. There are lots of things you have to be careful like that with in our nutrition. We have to be careful in our nutrition with these things, with these sorts of things. Good. Okay. So, but what is the probability? Where would you, now I'm not saying you should jump into these things. I got in gradually into vitamins, the main minerals being for our human bodies, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, boron. Those four together are, I believe, essential, crucial for good health. So I didn't stop those entirely during this recovery of mine. Now, I'm not suffering any ill health right now, okay? I just have a large amount of vitamin D still in my body, but it's not an excessive amount that's causing any harm. I mean, I'm at 100% health right now, but the thing is, I mean, 100% of the health I've been at, I'll probably get even healthier once I learn to master how to regulate the amount of vitamin D in my body. I'll get even healthier, but I'm at 100% of the health I was at before I ever experienced these symptoms, and during the time I've had excellent health, I'm only slightly, during the time when I had the highest level of health that I've ever experienced, possibly in my life, but, you know, I mean, there are many times when I started taking K2, for the first time I started taking K2, my health was the best it had ever been, and that was when I was at the age of about, well, 2016, roughly, when my wife was passing. She was in her last days. That was about the peak of my health. That's how I could get to the hospital or to her retirement home every day and do it every day and continue doing all the things I was doing as well and not have any deficiency of energy, although there was plenty of stress, but I mean, I didn't have any deficiency. But I mean, we could talk about this for days and days. The point is, you need to pursue health. I need to pursue health. We all need to pursue health if we want to avoid disease. It's not just one disease that we're trying to avoid. Keep that in mind as well. There's not just one massive disease. But also keep in mind that the so-called healthcare providers are working together with the pharmaceutical companies, and they are benefited by people who actually need their services. So, and also there are many people who don't know how to properly pursue health. So they might need these care providers, and consequently the care providers also feel obligated to warn them about these risks. And you know, what they don't do is, because they're unable to, is they can't instruct people on how to eliminate cancer or how to avoid cancer by natural means, because they don't know how. So, I mean, going to these people will prevent you from pursuing your good health, going to these people will prevent us from pursuing our good health. I mean, it prevents us, because we are then subject to the fears that these people have and that they see manifesting in terrible injury and disease in their patients. And the manifestation of which disease, is also in part caused by those very fears that are planted into our minds by these mainstream thinkers. And people who generally deal with the public, you know, in general, have to think that way. But the thing is, it's definitely a trap that we would like to avoid. We'd like to stay free from being in the hospital or even under the care of a physician of another sort other than ourselves, you know, our own personal mental regulating, you know, which comes from Jehovah, but that can be utilized and practiced or implemented more effectively when we listen to our bodies and when we begin to learn about some of the essential and continue to learn about the essential nutrients that our bodies need. So, as I said, I could talk a long, long time about this, but we're not going to today, but because there are many other good things in life. We're going to live life to the full, no matter what, no matter what our current state of health is. Now, I believe my current state of health is excellent, absolutely excellent right now. And that's been despite the fact that I've had this overdose of vitamin D. I listened to my body, and as soon as I had symptoms, I realized something was wrong, and I had good reason to suspect either vitamin A or vitamin D. At first I thought it was vitamin A, but then I realized it's vitamin D. It only took a few days to realize that, but I'm still cautious about vitamin A right now too, and all the other vitamins I'm being very cautious, but so I won't take the omegas for a while yet, because they all have a lot of... If I do, I'll take them by themselves without any further vitamin A, because they have vitamin D in them. That's the other thing. A lot of these omegas, like any fish liver, like cod liver oil, has a lot of vitamin D, as well as vitamin A, and usually has, I mean, I guess unless somebody's removed them, those particular vitamins, they will have those vitamins in there. So, I mean, D and A are tricky. Let's just put it that way. Yep, just be careful. I mean, if you're taking cod liver oil, don't take an excessive amount of other forms of DNA, that's all. But I mean, cod liver oil traditionally is taken in the wintertime, because that's when we're deficient in the sunshine provided components of vitamin D that we get from the sun, specifically in the summer. So, and Now you can, so you know, you don't want to, people don't want to overdose on vitamin D. That's probably why they don't take cod liver oil in the summer. But I just feel excellent. Okay, let's talk about something else. I feel excellent. Okay, the other thing is this. I bought two of these and two of these. And today I completed my testing of them in preparation for using them. This was made by a company called Envel. Is that right? They don't even put their name on the product. It doesn't even say Envel on it. Hang on a second. Oh, this sticker is coming off. I stuck these stickers onto, I stuck number stickers onto these. If they come off, I'll have to do something else. But I labeled these because I'd measured them for continuity. Continuity tester is a simple ohmmeter that enables you to determine continuity between one end of a cable and another. And that's what I used here for testing all of these dongles, as these would be called. They're called dongles. So these are, this is number 7 and 8. Yeah, I'm sorry, you probably weren't seeing them because I wasn't holding them in the right place. This is the Envel. Okay, I'm using my iPhone 6S camera here, and I finally learned how to lock the exposure in place. I got two of these. Two of the Envels. You need to put them in the corner. Here, there we go. They look like that. And then I have two of these. I only need to show you one of them. Ducabel. These arrived just a few days ago. The Ducabel. Or Duckable. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Ducabel. D-U-K-A-B-E-L. So, this is a much higher quality one. They both cost very little money. I can't remember now what these were. I think the Envel were like $8 each or something, $8 or $9. Now the other one, let's look at my orders here and check it out so I can give you the right number here. I've ordered peanut butter. I've been eating peanut butter. That's right. I'm starting to eat peanut butter now, and it has a form of vitamin D called vitamin D2 in it. And that's a less effective form than vitamin D3, so it's safer to eat that with the vitamin D in it than take vitamin D3 supplement. So I'm taking, because the D2 won't be as effective, so it won't increase my calcium in the blood. It's a safer form of vitamin D if you get a vitamin D toxicity is peanut butter, if you can eat that without allergies and things. So if not, you can probably find some other good source of vitamin D that's safer than the normal form. But this is $11.58. How is that? This is the good quality one. This is the one that is, I didn't know. Now, the reason I bought two kinds, I would have just bought this one kind. Maybe four I would have bought. I bought two of them. And the reason, two of them like this. There are three connectors, two at one end, one at the other. And I bought two of these. So it's a splitter. It has one connector, a male tip ring sleeve at that end. See the rings on there? Tip ring sleeve. And then the other end, it's a splitter, and the other end has two connectors. This is the Ducabel. Now, I've labeled them X and Y. Yeah, I think you can see that. X and Y. So, they will be one of these. X is, well, they're both the same. These on the Ducabel, both of these inputs, which are female, they're both identical with each other. In that both of them can be used as either a microphone input or a headphone output or a speaker output, you know, to an amplifier. In other words, it's just called a headphone output, though. Or it's really it's more than a line level output. It's a little higher than that, I guess, because it's got to drive headphones. But perhaps it's close to being a line level signal, which would be like 1 volt, say, or 0.3 volt, you know, 0.3 volts, 1 volt, something in that range. Because 0.3 volts is a consumer line level of a consumer stereo. 1 volt is a professional studio line level. So, I mean, just think in terms of approximately 1 volt and that you're at the level of the line level, what's called line level. You know, speaker voltages that are sent to speakers are higher, so they tend to be, you know, in the order of, well, there's no real range. It could be anything above 1 volt, really, is a speaker level signal. But, I mean, it could go up to 100 volts, you know, and so on. Or more, depending on the speakers and the amplifier and so on. But the level that's sent to, I mean, the reason I know it's 100 volts is because you can connect 100 volt house voltage, line voltage from your wall socket directly to the Bose speakers here, my 201s. People have done that just to demonstrate that when you do, you just get a loud bass noise from your speakers. It doesn't harm them. They can handle 100 volts, these Bose 201s that I've got here. I'm not intending to demonstrate anything today about that, but this is the Duca Bell. And when you talk about the inputs on this Duca Bell, first of all, why would you buy this, right? And is buying one of these dongles better than buying, not, first of all, every time we come to a new point, we have to decide what are we going to talk about first. So this is another first of all. First of all, let's talk about the difference between the Duca Bell and the Envel. These are labeled 0 and 9. 0 on this one indicates more than just a number of two identical female connectors. The male end is the same. Right, the male end is the same. It's tip, ring, 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 sleeve. Okay, that's the same as the Duca Bell. Tip, ring, 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 sleeve. Let's show them both side by side. Show them side by side. Now there is a slight difference, but you see where the thin part begins. They're identical. The Duca Bell has an additional thicker portion near the base there, and that enables it to be plugged in and be used in some other way differently from, but it will still work in all the same sockets that the blue one will, because they're identical from the tip down. One looks bigger than the other, doesn't it? Oh no, maybe not. But I've plugged them in. I know they're identical. Or they're identical, they're close enough, let's say. So they definitely work. But they do look slightly different. But they're identical, okay? Essentially. Now, the difference in the ends, though. The blue ends, it's not just a labeling of the numbers, which indicates, it doesn't just indicate that there are two identical units with different numbers on them. They're different. The zero is only for microphones. Only for microphones. It's got a little microphone symbol. You see that there? Above the zero. More, you know, about half an inch above. And the other one has a little headphone symbol. Just above the 9, about a half an inch above it. So that indicates that this one only works with headphones. And this one only works with microphones, okay? Yeah. Only works with microphones. So I know why that is, because today I used another device that I have which is the Maya plug like this, but it's a DIY plug like this, which doesn't have any cable attached to it. And I removed this shell from it because it's unscrews. It's a DIY connector that I can solder onto another wire. I could solder it onto a separate piece of wire that I cut myself. And I can make my own connectors as long as it's the correct wire that I'm using. I can make my own connectors like this, or I can make an adapter to be able to plug into these, or to be able to get my audio signal from my microphone preamp into the female end of one of these. Okay, that's why I need to know what's happening inside here and how these work. When I plug my DIY in there, I'm able to measure the voltages from each of these parts that are plugged into these females here. Right? I can measure the female end with the DIY that looks like this plugged into it, but with the connections exposed. And because I can plug it into here, I can access the internals of these without opening them up. So I plug in my DIY that looks like that, but it doesn't have, it's a female, it's a male like this, but when I plug it in, I have the female end, but there's no casing. So I can test the female connections on it, compare them, but it's plugged into this, so I'm testing these female connections then, right? And at the other end of these cables, at the same time, I'm able to test the continuity between the male end then and these female ends using that DIY that's plugged into here. So having done that, I know how these are connected. The microphone signal on this one, on the Jukabell, is always carried, and on both of them. On the male end, the microphone signal is always carried by the tip ring sleeve. So it's carried by the sleeve. It's always carried by the sleeve. And the second ring is always the ground for both microphone and audio output. And tip and ring one are always in the case of audio outputs, it's always the audio output stereo, left and right. The tip is left, ring one is right, ring two is the ground. And that ring two serves as ground for those audio and also for the sleeve, which is the microphone. So you can have a microphone and a stereo output connected at the same time with these devices. Now the anvil's a bit different. I don't think I'll go into why or what the difference is, because it'll just be too much information. But it's basically very simple. It's just that the anvil doesn't use the sleeve as the microphone, okay? Because it doesn't have the females of the anvil, even though they are tip ring sleeve on the microphone. Wait, what is? I'm just gonna look it up here. I wrote it all down, so I know. You see? Let's see the So here, ring two is still the ground wire, okay? And the tip is the left stereo output, the audio output, left channel. The ring one is the right audio output stereo of the stereo, right? So stereo is left and right, and it's tip and ring one respectively. But the microphone for the anvil, it's got ring one connected to the microphone. It's not connected to the sleeve of the anvil male, right, is connected. So on the male end, it always has to be, the microphone is always the sleeve, because that's what is used by the Mac devices and by some other devices too. But Mac devices made by Apple, they always have these tip ring ring sleeve inputs that mean that the microphone's always provided on the sleeve, which is the it's the furthest contact away from the tip, okay, and the rings separate the different contacts. And that sleeve is always the microphone connector on the male end, but on the female end of the Envel, we have the sleeve of the male connected on then to the female end of ring one. It's connected to ring one, because ring two, as we said, is always the ground. So it's designed for a different type of plug, a different type of microphone plug that doesn't have tip ring ring sleeve on it. It's designed for a different, like a Lavalier mic or something like that. But the other thing, interesting thing on my two Envels, one of my Envels, the female ring is also connected to ring two. The ring one is connected to ring, or the tip, I should say. It's ring one. It's not ring two. Ring two is always the ground. It's ring one. Ring one and sleeve, so it's very confusing if you've never done this before, but ring one is always going to be the for these tip ring ring sleeved connectors. They only have, in other words, the type of connector you're going to plug into it is like this. It's not tip ring ring sleeve. It's tip ring. It's not tip ring ring ring. I should say it's tip ring ring. Two rings. Tip ring ring sleeve, and the sleeve is bigger, wider, but it's tip ring ring sleeve. See those two black rings instead of tip ring 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 sleeve. So this is the type of connector that's intended to be used with the Envel female, is to plug in this type of male connector. That's why it's connecting and using ring one as the, that's ring one, right? The first ring after the tip, the first ring after the tip is ring one. It's using ring one as the signal for the microphone. And it's in those sorts of connectors, the ground is designed to be ring two, right? Or in this case, the sleeve, because this connector is only blessed with having tip ring sleeve, so ring two is the sleeve on this tip ring ring sleeve type connector. So ring two is always the ground, and it's true in that case too. But in the case of my two Envels that I got, one of them had ring one and the tip connected together, so both ring one and the tip were used as the signal for the microphone, whereas the other one only had ring one used, so it wasn't using the tip at all for anything. Not that I could tell, anyway. It's not using it. So it doesn't matter if it uses both, but I wanted to be aware of what was the case. You know, I did my own quality control before I'm even going to use these. I've never used these yet, but now I know they will work. If I wire them up correctly, according to what I know now, and I can make my own wire to come from my microphone preamp into the microphone input here on one of these devices. The microphone can be connected to either one of these on the Ducabel, but you can't connect more than one microphone, or you can only have one mic signal at one time, because there's only one mic wire on this male end, and that's the sleeve. So you're going to only be able to connect one microphone, even though this is a better design, because you can connect the microphone to either one of these on the Ducabel. They're both the same. But if you put more than one in there, they'll be interfering with each other. You won't be able to use two microphones and control their volumes or anything. You won't be able to. It's wrong. You don't want to connect two microphones, is what I currently believe anyway. Don't do it. You're not going to get a separate signal. Now, why do we want only one microphone is the question, right? And that the answer to that is, when you're doing multi-track recording, you only want one signal. You don't want to have you don't want to record more than one thing at the same time if you're a multi-track artist, recording artist, because you can control your voice better if you're not playing an instrument at the same time. So you want one microphone, you sing into that microphone. Or if you're performing an instrument that's an electronic signal coming out of that instrument, you can record that signal through the same microphone input. If it's, well, you can do it regardless, because these inputs are flexible enough to handle the levels of whatever you're putting into it, whatever level it is, they're flexible enough to handle that, as long as it's not too high a level, you know. But it's typically a line level signal. They can handle a line level signal of like 1 volt or something, whereas a microphone signal is much less than 1 volt, and that's why it can handle that, though. Can handle that as long as it's got enough. I'm not sure what the voltage is on these new, on the typical modern day Lavalier mics. I don't own one of those. Well, I do own the ear pods. They have a microphone built into them, so I don't know what the voltage level is on those. I'll be learning that now that I'm talking about it. Of course, I'll be studying it now, but I know that it can handle a mic that has a preamp. You know, it can handle that signal because it can handle line level signals, so it can handle that. But I'm imagining it could probably handle a much lower level than that. You know, like a non-amplified, or, you know, a raw microphone signal from an Electret microphone that's not. Or it's, they can't even be Electret, can they? Because they don't have a battery in them. So, but Electret microphones have a battery, and they produce. Well, some microphones require phantom power, which is either provided by a battery or from a preamp. So phantom power is something that's used to boost that signal, and then you have the option of increasing that gain or that voltage slightly higher, which is a gain. When you increase a voltage, it's called gain. You're gaining something in the voltage. So I know more than nearly everybody about audio signals and how they work, and I know about decibels and all of the physics involved in calculating all these things that you need to calculate in order to do audio engineering, because I'm an engineer and I've studied physics and engineering, and we studied electronics, you know, when I was an engineer particularly. So, and you know, all that information is useful in audio engineering, but what are we going to do is the question. When we are going to, you know, we are not all going to be able to do the same with regard to these things. Well, we can all learn, and learn a bit more each day. Now, why do you want to use? Okay, having said what I've said, we can plug in a microphone. I suspect that these Lavalier microphones are just lower voltage. An Electret microphone won't work at all without phantom power. It just doesn't produce a signal. But these other microphones, they don't need a battery, apparently. There's no battery inside my earpods. So they're just some kind of, perhaps, there are such things called dynamic microphones. There are ribbon microphones. Never put phantom power on a ribbon microphone unless you know what you're doing, okay? You can destroy the ribbon mic, but any other type of microphone, generally, you won't hurt the mic. But you should check and research first before you put phantom power onto a microphone. But from what I've researched recently, there's no real danger. But I've been hesitating with my box. This is the box I built. I've been hesitating to put phantom power, which this has, and there's no option to turn it off. It's got two channels, for two microphones, but I can only record one of them at one time with my computer, right? But why do you only want one? We said why. And that is, you only want one channel because you can only control one channel to the optimal or maximum capability of your talent, right? You can't control a guitar and sing at the same time as to the greatest. Well, I'm sure some people probably need to play their guitar while they're singing, or they can't do either. But I mean, for most of us, you can't do both at once as well as you can do one or the other. So it's better to be able. I mean, it's not better. All you really need is what I'm saying. If you're an artist, right? We're not talking about performers. If you're an artist, all you really need, and this is the other thing I have. Look at this. What's this? Oh, yeah, this is the output. Okay, this is a little dongle I prepared. It's got the foam plug to plug into this. It's just a tip sleeve. Tip sleeve, I plug it into my output of this box. Okay, click, plug it in. And then I take, it's got two outputs, one of negative and one of positive, because the balance mic in has a positive and a negative. So I can take either the positive or the negative, whichever I want, and the phase matters, plus or minus is the phase. Phase matters because you can get phase interference, and you might want to switch from positive to negative to eliminate phase interference. This secondary dongle I plugged into here is giving me a tip sleeve in the form of a 3.5 millimeter plug, and that I believe is already what I need to plug into one of these. It's got the tip and sleeve, and that's what I need to get. But I can't. But the problem is, you know what? I won't be able to get it. No, this will not work. You see, because the microphone always is the sleeve, and I won't be able to get it ground because there's no ring two here. This doesn't have two rings on it. I can't get a ground signal from this. So I can't get a microphone signal using this dongle. I'll have to make my own dongle, right? And I'll use it. I'll make it using a DIY mail that looks exactly like this, but it's a DIY that I can solder onto the insides of it. So I'll make my own like that, right? And then I'll be able to plug that. It'll be on the end of this, but I'll have a cable. I won't cut this one up because it's already been fabricated. I don't have to cut it up. I could, but I've got some other cables I can use to manufacture this from. I've got some cable, connect some wire that's lying around. In rolls, or I've got rolls of it, or I've got maybe old or long cables that I'm no longer using that I can scavenge. I've got a way to make a cable. All right, with the connector that I want, which is this, right? Or in the case of the, it won't work with this. It will work with this, right? But if I'm connecting to the Envel, which doesn't use the sleeve as the microphone signal. Then I might want to use the other thing here as my DIY, the tip ring sleeve. And well, that's only tip ring sleeve. That's the problem. That doesn't have a ring too either, but it won't matter because it uses ring one as the signal and ring two as the ground. So this will work. You see, that'll work. Interesting. I mean, it takes a lot of knowledge. You understand these things. I know that. It takes, and that means it's a big sacrifice. It's a big sacrifice of time, also. In order to master, to gain the mastery, that can then be put into practice. Without you know, having any, you know, why? Come here. to gain sufficient mastery, which is a necessarily, it's not optionally, it's necessarily mastery at a very high level. Because if it's not at a high level, then there will be doubt. There will be doubt creeping in while you're doing recording. While you're actually recording, not while you're performing, but if anything goes wrong, doubt will creep in while you're in the middle of trying to record a song. And that doubt will cause you to use up time that you need to instead be using to produce your song or your recording, right? So this preparation is essential, even though it's very time consuming. So why buy one of these? Okay, should you buy? Okay, you might say, well, I don't need this, you know, I can avoid all this necessarily learning all this stuff. I'll just buy one of those units that they make. I'll buy this device that costs $100, $200 or more, and I'll just connect my devices to that. That's what people will say, right? And why not do that? And I'll tell you why. But for one thing, you're still going to have the same issues that those devices use the same sorts of things inside. Same ideas are used. But the other problem, the more important problem, is the device that you buy will only be supported for software, in software, and for the use with software for a certain period of time, and then they'll stop supporting it and they'll make it obsolete so that you have to buy another device, okay? And yet, these devices, probably even the $8, but certainly the $11 device or $12 device, these will work equally well. In fact, they're better because they're simpler. They'll work just as well. And actually, they're better because you don't have the added complexity of the internals of these devices that can go wrong. And not only the software that can make it obsolete, but the internals can go wrong. They can fail too. It's more complex. The circuitry is more complex. Something could fail. It may not, but it could. I own an Apogee, which is now basically obsolete, but it's a very interesting, and it has dongles associated with it. I've lost the dongles currently. I don't know where the dongles are, but I stopped using it because the software wasn't working. With the new M1 Max, MacBook Pros, with the new M1s, Apple Silicon, it didn't work. In the software, I had problems with it. And then I realized, you know, I don't want to use it. At that time, I wasn't thinking, oh, these dongles are better. I was thinking, no, I don't want to use it anymore because it's too much of a hassle. Because it didn't work anymore. It didn't work. So I either have to wait for software updates and keep checking and see, does it work now? Or forget it, even though it's a decent device. But it's just added circuitry, because it's going to do its own analog to digital conversion. If I'm happy with the quality of the analog to digital conversion in the Mac laptop, then I don't need that device. Now maybe the analog to digital is superior, or the digital to analog coming back into the speakers also. Maybe that is superior in the Apogee than what it is in the Mac. I haven't really investigated in that particular case, but every case you'd have to compare. Every single case you'd have to decide which is better. If you have the money to buy new devices and update to the latest and greatest and the most expensive and also the most, you know, prodigious sound quality, then, you know, and if money's no object, perhaps you will do that, or maybe you want to do that, but you should be aware. I realize that's really just a trap. It's not significant what you're going to benefit by doing that. I guess unless you're at the level of, you know, where your audio quality has to be, and your ears are that good. Most of us, even if we have excellent ears, we can't tell the difference. In a lot of these cases, it's just not. And I'm saying the best ears can't tell. Even the best ears can't tell the difference. And even if they could tell the difference, it's a subjective thing, how something sounds. Unless we're talking about distortion, which is obviously not a good thing. But even in that case, in some cases, some sounds benefit from distortion. And when audio comes through the speakers, there's quite a lot of distortion. If it's coming through any speakers transducers that are speaker boxes rather than earphones, there's a lot of harmonic distortion. And even in any earphone, I'm sure there's a lot of total harmonic distortion there too. It's of the order of like 1% total harmonic distortion. That's what gives audio transducers their character. It gives them their character, because they have different amounts of these harmonic distortion levels, or different levels of harmonic distortion in different kinds of harmonic, different elements, different aspects. Harmonic distortion is where the multiples of the frequency, a multiple of a frequency, is kind of added to the signal. So if you have a frequency of 100 hertz, it's going to be contaminated by 200 hertz and 400 hertz, and that's harmonic distortion. But those are desirable in many cases, and they exist whether you want them or not in the speaker output, the output of the speaker that comes to your ears. So anyway, there's a lot to learn still. Now I think we can say the only thing you need, what I've been saying here. Where did I put that connector? Did I drop it? Where is it? Did I put it down here? I put it down here with this. Okay. Yeah, the only thing you need is something like this. This is the Duca Bell. This is the Duca Bell. It's got an excellent braided cable on it. It's got stress relief. It has gold plated. Both of them are gold plated connectors. That's the best quality of connection, is a gold plate connector. So you've got these great little connectors. You don't need any of these other devices. You need $10, $12 is all you need, and you're all set with your computer. Let's go. And I'm serious. That's all you need. So you can do anything. You can go anywhere with that. Can do anything. So paragraph 3-6 of our article, Wild Road Ahead to History, part 1, the consideration of Passion 1, 1st Shemu 1, summer day 1, as the start of the year in the Amarna period from Akhenaten on, Ramesses I up to Ramesses II, but of course also Tutankhamun is included. Or perhaps not for Tutankhamun, because Tutankhamun abandoned Amarna, so we didn't include him on the list here. From Akhenaten on is now of interest. That's Passion 1, as the beginning of the year. And it is a new proposition we arrived at by studying known dates within the foregoing parameters. Now, what were the foregoing parameters? They are mentioned in this article if you want to read them, if you haven't read it already. It appears inconceivable that an Aten-worshipping king like Akhenaten, who loathed Amun, or Amun, who was the Egyptian god, he loathed Amun enough to overturn the entire religious system, which was Egyptian, would not introduce a reform. It appears inconceivable that Akhenaten, who loathed Amun, would not introduce a reform based on the sun to the calendar convention of Egypt. Interestingly, the 30 years and 10 months of Manetho's account in Josephus, as given for Amenhotep III, can be reconciled beautifully with Amenhotep's June 17th date of coronation in 1405 BCE, because March 30th, 1374, is a Passion 1 year beginning. That is the date of Passion 1 in that year, March 30th in the Julian calendar. And Vernal Equinox 1374 BCE is April 3rd, which is not much different from March 30th. Vernal Equinox being, okay, it's the beginning of it's the beginning of summer. Yeah. Because the sun is now, the days are getting longer than the nights after vernal equinox. Akhenaten, the sun-worshipping rebel, is dated to this time when vernal equinox was near the start of summer. But that summer, in this case, being referred to as the summer of the Egyptian calendar, Shemu being the season of summer, or at the least the calendrical summer, then I say, this is the explanation, near the vernal equinox was near the start of summer, or at the least the calendrical summer called Shemu 1, the first month of summer. Passion 1 is the first day of that first Shemu month. Passion 1, it's called. Passion 1 is the same as first Shemu 1. And it's April 3rd for the first time in 1393 BCE, as the Egyptian calendar months are regressing slowly through the Julian months and thus through the actual seasons. So Passion 1 is equal to April 3rd for the first time in 1393 BCE. That's the vernal equinox. But then, later on, March 30th in 1374 BCE, March 30th is Passion 1. So we see that it's shifting. We saw that it was shifting just there. Now, I wish I'd left this. It's a stiffer wire, so it causes more issues. The Duke of Bell is a stiffer wire, so if you want flexible wires, you can buy the other one. But they're not quite, it's not quite as high a quality, and the price is similar. But the anvil is still good, I believe. But one of the connectors on the anvil came undone. It slipped, so I just put a little bit of goop or any kind of flexible glue would just be helping to keep this sleeve, the blue sleeve, from slipping. And maybe the other ones won't slip, but if they do, I can glue them. I know the goop will never come undone. So a tiny bit of goop in there, and then slide it back on, and wipe away the excess, and you're done. So it's not in contact with the wires either. And by the way, I hope it's not, these wires are never going to get hot. That's the other thing. If they do, I still need to investigate, is that goop flammable? I don't know. But anyway, the months are regressing. As we go through Julian calendar months, the Egyptian calendar months are regressing. The significance to chronology is that we now have the reason for the 30 years and 10 months of Josephus for Amenhotep III or Amenophis, since the elapsed time. The 10 months of Josephus for Amenhotep III or Amenophis, we have the reason for it, since the elapsed time from June 17th, 1405, year 1, Amenhotep III, 1405, June 17th, year 1, that's his year 1, and that's his coronation. From then until March 30th, 1374, year 2, Amenhotep IV, who is Akhenaten, he's called Amenhotep IV, he's the son of Amenhotep III, but he changed his name to Akhenaten, I believe, is why that is. But the year beginning for him, if it's Passion 1, it's going to be March 30th. If he's worshipping the first month of summer, it's March 30th, 1374. And that's a period of, in the Egyptian calendar, of 30 years, 9 months, and 18 days. Epaph 13 is 3 Shemu 13, because Epaph is another name for 3rd Shemu, or the 3rd month of Shemu. Okay. Thus, 2 months, 12 days, after Passion 1 is when Epaph is. Is that right? Let's see. Yes, Epaph is the third month of Shemu. Passion is the first month of Shemu. So and there's 30 days in each month. So this would be 17 days to get to the end of, or sorry, 13 days to get to the beginning, or the end of the last month, actually, the previous month. Let's go from Passion. 30 days to get to the beginning of the next month, the second month of Shemu, right? And 30 days to get the other to the next month, the first of Epaph, which is 60 days, and then 12 more days. So that's 72 days, 2 months and 12 days after Passion 1 of first Shemu 1. But in other words, Epaph 13, 1375 also, which is, we can go back from 1374 into 1375. That's 30 years after the 1405 coronation. Exactly 13 years in the Egyptian calendar, right? From 1405 to 1375, Epaph 13 to Epaph 13, it's exactly 30 years. And therefore, and we had a difference then of 10 months. See, we see this is 72 days, right? 2 months and 12 days. But we're going from Epaph 13 up until Passion, and there's still 72 days more to go. So 365 days is an Egyptian year, minus 72 would be, well, we could work it out. 13, it's just 365 minus 72 is the difference in the two dates. 365 minus 72. If you're not understanding this so far, if you don't follow this, later on you probably you'll be able to follow it later as you become more knowledgeable. But as you learn more, 365 minus 72 is 293. Okay, that's not even 10 months. Let's see. Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. If we went 10 months, though, we'd go 7 more days, which would take us to Passion 8. From 293, 7 more days would be 300. That would be 300 is 10 times 30, or 10 months of 30 days. And that would take us to Passion 8, 1374. If we went 300 days after Epaph 13 in 1375. So, therefore, Passion 1 is the start, the new start of the regular, or sorry, whereas, not therefore, whereas, so that's taking us past the start of the regular year, past Passion 1, it's taking us, 10 months takes us to Passion 8, okay, instead of to Passion 1, and we were expecting 30 years and 10 months, so it's 30 years, 9 months, you know, and something. But there's it's not just a question of in the Egyptian calendar. It doesn't just have months of 30 days. There's an Epagamenal month of 5 days at the end of the 12 months as well. If you're going to do it, calculating on an interim basis, you have to be aware of that. But 30 years and 10 months. We have 30 years and 10 months minus 7 days, but that's not a problem either, because this date in 1405 that we have, which we call June 17th, is also the coronation of Amenhotep III. It's not his accession date, it's his coronation, and the coronation always happens after the accession. You're crowned. The crowning. There's no such word as, no such verb as coronate. You can't coronate somebody. You crown them. That's called the coronation. So, this coronation occurred after the accession, because it can't crown you if you're not yet the king. So the crowning would have been later. So the fact that we're a little bit short of our 10 months is not a concern, because he was taking the throne sometime before that, and therefore this you know, 293 days. It's longer than 293. It might be even 300 days. So this 30 years, 10 months is pretty well reconciled, as I say here. That's the end of our study of this article in The Wild Road Ahead to History, Part 1. Little children, now let's turn to Genesis chapter 9. Or should we do Psalms first? I think we'll do Psalms maybe first. And then we'll hopefully we'll get through this study. There's so many things I want to talk about, but I think I've covered them all, but it's going to be a long video if I don't get through this. We're at 149 of Psalms. Have I even read this? Yes, I have. At least that's... Wait a minute. Maybe not. I think I did. I mean, read it today. I've certainly read it, but today, I think I read it today, but I don't remember reading it today. I'm reading it right now. Okay, Psalm 149. Praise Jah, you people. Sing to Jehovah a new song. His praise in the congregation of loyal ones. Let Israel rejoice in its grand maker. The sons of Zion, let them be joyful in their king. Let them praise his name with dancing, with the tambourine and the harp. Let them make melody to him. For Jehovah is taking pleasure in his people. He beautifies the meek ones with salvation. Let the loyal ones exult in glory. Let them cry out joyfully on their beds. Let the songs extolling God be in their throat, and a two-edged sword be in their hand, to execute vengeance upon the nations, rebukes upon the national groups, to bind their kings with shackles, and their glorified ones with fetters of iron, to execute upon them the judicial decision written. Such splendor belongs to all his loyal ones. Praise Jah, you people. That's Psalm 149. Let's call that one self-explanatory. Let's look at Genesis chapter 9. And God went on to bless Noah and his sons and to say to them, remember, this is after the deluge, be fruitful and become many, and fill the earth, and a fear of you and a terror of you will continue upon every living creature of the earth, and upon every flying creature of the heavens, upon everything that goes moving on the ground, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand they are now given. Every moving animal that is alive may serve as food for you. That's new. As in the case of green vegetation, I do give it all to you. Only flesh with its soul, its blood, you must not eat. And besides that, your blood of your souls shall I ask back from the hand of every living creature. Shall I ask it back? And from the hand of man, from the hand of each one who is his brother, shall I ask back the soul of man? Anyone shedding man's blood, by man will his own blood be shed. For in God's image he made man. And as for you men, be fruitful and become many. Make the earth swarm with you and become many in it. And God went on to say to Noah and to his sons with him, and as for me, here I am establishing my covenant with you men and with your offspring after you, and with every living soul that is with you among fowls, among beasts, and among all living creatures of the earth with you, from all those going out of the ark to every living creature of the earth. Yes, I do establish my covenant with you. No more will all flesh be cut off by waters of a deluge, and no more will there occur a deluge to bring the earth to ruin. And God added, this is the sign of the covenant that I am giving between me and you and every living soul that is with you for the generations to time indefinite. My rainbow I do give in the cloud, and it must serve as a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. And it shall occur that when I bring a cloud over the earth, then the rainbow will certainly appear in the cloud. And I shall certainly remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living soul among all flesh. And no more will the waters become a deluge to bring all flesh to ruin. And the rainbow must occur in the cloud. And I shall certainly see it to remember the covenant to time indefinite between God and every living soul among all flesh that is upon the earth. And God repeated to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I do establish between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. And Noah's sons who came out of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth. Later Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were Noah's sons, and from these was all the earth's population spread abroad. Now Noah started off as a farmer and proceeded to plant a vineyard. And he began drinking of the wine and became intoxicated, and so he uncovered himself in the midst of his tent. Later, Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and went telling it to his two brothers outside. At that, Shem and Japheth took a mantle and put it upon both their shoulders and walked in backwards. Thus they covered their father's nakedness while their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. Finally, Noah awoke from his wine and got to know what his youngest son had done to him. At this he said, cursed be Canaan. Let him become the lowest slave to his brothers. And he added, blessed be Jehovah Shem's God, and let Canaan become a slave to him. Let God grant ample space to Japheth, and let him reside in the tents of Shem. Let Canaan become a slave to him also. And Noah continued to live 350 years after the deluge. So all the days of Noah amounted to 950 years, and he died. That was Genesis 9. I was going to say Psalm 149, but we did that already. Genesis 9. We're done. So the rainbow covenant and the idea of not eating blood, but there's a figurative sense of the word eat too, implies not using blood. Figurative implication there as well, that some people might miss, of course, but there's a literal meaning of not using blood in the sense, not using it for food. But they also weren't to use it for fertilizer either, it seems to me. Well, they were to pour it out on the ground, but they weren't supposed to use blood for any purpose. That was the thing. If they weren't going to use it and they had blood, they were to pour it out on the ground, which meant, in other words, throw it away. Not use it for fertilizer or anything like that. That's not what was intended with that. So, even look at the fishes of the sea. The fishes of the sea that probably survived this deluge, they also saw the rainbow covenant. They're mentioned in verse 2, the fishes of the sea. But they also saw the rainbow. They see the rainbow covenant. They see the sign of the covenant, the rainbow. So, little children, that was today's study. That's enough for today. It's March 9th, 2023. It's 15:55 hours. God bless you. I love you all very much. It's a wonderful day today. We have a wonderful opportunity now in certain parts of the world that spring is coming. remain faithful, you know, fight the fine fight of the faith, seek first the kingdom, you know, be rejoicing in all your work, have faith in the Messiah Jesus, who is the anointed one of Jehovah, also called Jesus Christ. I love you again. I love you again. God bless you. Let's bless God as well. And love one another. Have a wonderful day. Bye for now.